Okay, so it's use this one. So, but perhaps before we do something new, let us start with warming up by looking at it at characteristic functions for contractions in a Hilbert space as defined by Notch-Fayash. So that's a good background to repeat this. So, if you want to analyze a contraction on a Hilbert space, you can do it in the following way. You look at the minimal isometric dilation, so you could go to a larger Hilbert space. You construct an isometry there so that the compression of the powers of the isometry V gives the powers of T. That's the dilation property. And then if you have some minimality, it's determined up to unitary equivalence, and so it makes sense to further analyze the isometry V. And you find, if you represent it on the Hilbert space H plus orthogonal complement, which I call HA, then it's a 2x2 matrix of this form, T in the left upper corner and 0 in the right upper corner. And by the way, exactly this is what I call the lifting in this talk. So just very, very simple-minded, just 2x2 operator matrices with a 0 in the right upper corner. That's a lifting for me. So this dilation is a lifting. In other words, HA is invariant for V, and further analysis shows the restriction is a shift with wandering subspace, the defect space dt of t. Then you can go on. It's all things. Just to remind you, it's just motivation, so we take the simplest case. If T star stable, so the powers of T star tend to 0 in the strong operator topology, then V itself is a shift with wandering subspace, the defect space of T star. So in this case, you can use the theorem of Stirling characterizing invariant subspaces of shifts. So HA, the orthogonal complement of H, is an invariant subspace for a shift, so it corresponds to an inner, in particular, analytic function on the unit disk. In general, with values in the operators from dt to dt star. And this is the famous characteristic function of t as defined by Notch-Fayash, which determines t up to unitary equivalence. So let me go on to the generalization for row contractions given by Popescu. So instead of considering a single contraction, you consider a row contraction. So a tuple T1 to TD, D may be infinite. I just write it always as if it is finite. And row contraction means that as an operator from a direct sum of H to H, it's contractive. Here you also have a minimal isometric dilation, which is now a row isometry, which means that the VIs are isometries with orthogonal ranges. And here the dilation property is for all possible products, so alpha is any word in the letters 1 to D. And if we have minimality, then you have a quite similar theory. We need a concrete realization of the dilation space, which is H plus free Fock space tensor the defect space DT. So Fock space is written here. I call it gamma CD or just gamma in the sequel. And you may also think of it as the L2 over the three Sami groups in the generators. So I don't need the formula for V, but we need the formula for the space. So let's do the same again. Let's assume that T is star stable. So I always underline these row contractions to make the difference. So star stable, also called pure in this setting. So what does this mean? Best way to say it is to look at the CP map associated to the row contraction. X goes to some PI XTI star. And then star stable means that the powers of phi p applied to the identity go to zero. So in this case, you find that V is unitarily equivalent to a standard row isometry, namely the row isometry which is formed by the creation operators on the free Fock space. So we had this before in the last talk. So this is just L is just the tuple L1 to LD, which is formed by left tensoring with a canonical basis in CD. So and then the characteristic function is again the intertwiner between these two unitarily equivalent forms of writing down the asymmetric dilation. So it now goes from gamma tensor dt to gamma tensor dt star, and it intertwines these multi-shifts. So it's called multi-analytic. It's a nice generalization of analyticity, and it's isometric, so it's an inner multi-analytic function, and it's called the characteristic function of the row contraction. It also corresponds to an invariant subspace for the VIs. This is a Berling-type theorem proved by Arias Popescu and by Davidson Pitt. And it also determines T up to unitary equivalence. So let's come to the new idea, which we investigated myself together with Santana Day. So the idea is, look at the row contraction C1 to CD on the Hilbert space HC, and we call E a contractive lifting of C by A if EI has an operator matrix of this type. So you have CI and AI in the diagonal, and you have zero in the right upper corner. Yeah? So that's the usual definition of lifting in operator theory for single operators. I haven't seen it for tuples, but I think it's quite natural to do it also there. Now let us analyze this in the following way. We look at the minimal isometric dilation, VC of C, and in this situation it's of course embedded into the minimal isometric dilation VE of E on a reducing subspace. That's the general case. We come back to that. Let's first look at the special case when VE is also minimal for C. So when this reducing subspace is in fact the whole space, then we call this kind of lifting sub-isometric. In fact, we came to this from a different angle. I found recently that in the 80s, there's a paper of Douglas and Foyash where this is examined for single contractions, and so we took this terminology to call this kind of lifting sub-isometric lifting. Well, let's do it in more detail. So let E be such a sub-isometric lifting of C. So then we have a unitary between the which maps the space of dilation for E to the space of dilation for C. So we have a unitary from HE plus Fock space tensor DE to HC plus Fock space tensor DC, with the property that it's the identity on HC and that it intertwines the two dilations of C and of E. And then you can, of course, you can restrict it to this space where the whole thing is a multi-shift, here and here. So we define MCE to be the restriction of this W to gamma tensor DE. And what you get is a multi-analytic inner operator, which is, of course, as any multi-analytic operator by its value on the vacuum vector tensor DE, which is called the symbol of a multi-analytic function. Well, and this MCE is the object we want to call the characteristic function of the sub-isometric lifting E of Z. So, of course, the question is now: in what sense is it characteristic for the lifting? So let us investigate that. Well, first of all, there's also an invariant subspace associated to it, just the range of this MCE. So this suggests a Berling-type classification of such sub-isometric liftings, and this is what is done in the following theorem. So we start with a rho contraction on HZ. So this is always given. What is specified is only the lifting. Eh? You start with some given rho contraction, and what we want to classify is the lifting. So one-to-one correspondence, perhaps look first at part B. So here we have this invariant subspaces of gamma tensor defect space of C, which are invariant with respect to L tensor 1. Then this this Berling theorem, this corresponds to a multi-analytic inner operator with range in gamma tensor DC. We have to identify those which have the same range, which is can be done with this equivalence relation on multi-analytic inner operators. So this is essentially the Berling theorem. Now we have to think to what it corresponds with respect to sub-isometric liftings, and it turns out it's very nice. It corresponds exactly one-to-one to unitary equivalence classes of sub-isometric liftings E of C. So unitary equivalence of liftings in the natural sense, it's an intertwining unitary which is identical on HC. Yeah. So this is the theorem, which really says that this function is characteristic. Yeah? Well, that's the sub-isometric liftings. So we should, perhaps you would like to know which liftings are sub-isometric, a bit more concrete. So the following theorem is helpful for this question. So it says that a lifting E of D is sub-isometric, but so that's always the notation, yeah? May help to see this. So when is it sub-isometric? Now it's sub-isometric if and only if the A is star stable, we've seen that before, and additionally we need a condition on this connecting part B, and we need that B can be factorized in the following way. It's DC, the effect operator of C, times gamma star, times the star defect operator of A, with an isometry between these two defect spaces. So that's the characterization. It says that A must be small in some way, and that B connects the two parts in a satisfactory way. Yeah, it's nice to look at this in the co-isometric case where it simplifies. So with co-isometric case, I mean that the rope contraction is co-isometric, so we have an equality here instead of just less or equal. Huh? So in the co-isometric case, what one can do is prove this very easy but nice result. If we have two row contractions and C is co-isometric, then there's a one-to-one correspondence between co-isometric liftings E of C by A and isometries between the defect spaces D star A and D C. So that's even true if the lifting is not sub-isometric. It's just a kind of free parameterization of co-isometric liftings. And so if you combine this with the things before, you see that for in the co-isometric case, it's very easy, namely a lifting of C is a co-isometric lifting by a star stable A if and only if it is sub-isometric. Yeah? So in this case, you always get in the co-isometric setting, you always get a sub-isometric lifting if you just write something for A which is star stable. So these things occur very naturally in the co-isometric case, and in this case we always have a characteristic function in this case. Well, this result on co-isometric liftings suggests that the whole thing can be done more general. Let me present you our results on this. So let us look at the general case, not just sub-isometric. So we have a row contraction C on HC, and just a contractive lifting E on HC plus HA, not necessarily sub-isometric. Well, what happens then? Let's do the same analysis again. But now this dilation space for C is only a subspace of the dilation space of E. So we have to add an additional space K on the right here. And here is some dynamics I call Y, and we get a unitary which intertwines this. So a natural candidate for characteristic function here is just we restrict to this part where the whole thing is a shift or such a multi-shift. Then we apply the W, but then we have to project to this shift part. So this is of course a multi-analytic function, but it's not inner anymore because we have a projection here. It's a multi-analytic contractive function associated to this kind of lifting. But the question is now, of course, does it characterize the lifting, and there should be a condition on the lifting. Yeah. So when does it characterize this lifting? I think I have time to show you a small computation. What we really need. So you see, for example, we have the problem that this space K is simply cut off by this projection here. So in which case can we reconstruct this K from M is, for example, the question. So, and let me show you what we need. Is that this space gamma tensor DC plus K, that this is can be obtained as the linear span of gamma tensor DC with W applied to gamma tensor DE. Here I mean linear span. So this is what we need, and let me show you that in fact in this case we can reconstruct the space K. Namely, if we have a vector in this space K, then if we have this condition, we can write K as some WX projected to the space K, with some X in gamma tensor DE. We can write K in this way, but if you compute the norm of that, then this is by Pythagoras, it's just norm X squared minus the projection on gamma tensor DC of WX squared. So, and this is just by definition, this is the characteristic function which is given. X squared minus MCE X squared, and you can write this by some delta CE X squared with delta just the defect of M. So this is identity minus MCE star 1/2. And so you see that we can somehow just identify the space K with delta of gamma tensor DE circular of that. Yeah? So you can reconstruct K from M in this case. Yeah? It's a similar idea you also have in the usual theory of characteristic functions. So we need something like that. But of course that's a bit indirect. You would like to see it more directly in terms of the lifting. And this can be done. When is this the case? Now it's useful. The following proposition is useful in dealing with this problem. It's a result just characterizing rogue contractions of this form. So when is a rogue contraction with EIs having this form? Yes. So when when is a tuple with EIs of this form a rogue contraction? Now, this is the case if and only if the C and A are rogue contractions, of course, and then you need an additional condition on B, and the condition is that there exists a contraction from D star A to D C such that B factorizes in that way, defect D C times gamma star times B star A. Well, this is a well-known result in the case D equal to 1, but fortunately it's also true for row contractions. And for us, it suggests that we have to replace this isometry gamma, which occurred earlier in our formulas, by a contraction in the general case. So, and we can use this gamma, which is also kind of parameterization of the situation, to express what we need. So the following analysis is a bit technical, uses world decompositions of the isometric dilations, so let me just give you the result, what we need to get a satisfactory theory of characteristic functions. So two definitions here. So for the gamma, we need a property, a very weak property, which we called resolving, which is written here. It says something that gamma is injective on vectors of the form D star A alpha star H with H in HA. So in all the situations we considered earlier, that's of course the case. If gamma is isometric, injective, so it's resolving. I'll comment a bit on that later. So the definition of the liftings we need, we call the lifting E of C by A reduced if gamma is resolving and if A is completely non-co-isometric, which means that there's no non-trivial A I star in there in subspace on which A star acts isometrically, completely non-co-isometric. So, yes, so this means somehow that these two conditions mean somehow that the A is not so big in a way, it's completely non-co-isometric, and this gamma resolving means that the two parts are connected in some way by the B. Yeah? So you can, if you get used to this, it becomes more natural. In fact, all the cases we considered before and make sense in the setting are included. So this case, it includes the sub-isometric liftings, and it also includes co-isometric liftings by completely non-co-isometric row contractions A. So it's rather general, and it's in a way the best possible thing one can do if you want to have a complete characterization by characteristic functions. Namely, the theorem here is that, as before, so C is a rogue contraction. Reduced liftings are unitarily equivalent if and only if the characteristic functions in this sense are equivalent. And produced is the best in the following sense. What you also can do, you can start with an arbitrary contractive multi-analytic operator, M from gamma tensor D, D any Hilbert space, to gamma tensor DC, DC the defect space of some row contraction C. And then you can reconstruct the lifting from that, and you just go the way back. You start with this defect delta, and you use that to define an isometry W. X goes to MX plus delta X, and then you make a unitary out of it by adding a space HA here, which is just big enough, and then you add a space HC on which W acts identically, and so on. Yeah? So you can reconstruct the whole thing, and the lifting you construct in this way is in fact reduced. So in this sense, reduced lifting is the best you can have in this way. It's the right setting for thinking about characteristic functions. Okay, just a few more properties. Just mention them. So the properties. So MCE, this characteristic function, contains the characteristic function of the completely non-coisometric A in the sense of Popescu. Yeah? I've shown you characteristic function in the sense of Popescu in the star stable case, but Popescu also did it for a completely non-coisometric case. And of course, if you have such a lifting, if you want to specify such a lifting, in particular, you have to give the information about A. Yeah? So this should be somehow contained, and it is. We can identify the characteristic function of A as a part of the characteristic function for the lifting. That's this point. Second point is a factorization, which works nicely. If E is a lifting of C, and E tilde is a lifting of E, then you can think of E tilde as a lifting of C, and you find that the characteristic function from C to E tilde is just the product of the characteristic function from C to E times the characteristic function from E to E tilde. So this works nicely. Okay. So, well, I promised to give some applications to completely positive maps, and this, at least for me, this was the motivation for looking at this thing. So the connection is very direct. If you have a tuple of operators, you have associated completely positive map on V of H, just mapping X to the sum Ti X Ti star. And of course, row contractions correspond to contractive CP maps, and the co-isometric case corresponds exactly to the case of a unital CP map. So let's look what lifting for the row contraction means for the CP maps. This is done here. So again, we have, as always, the contractive lifting E of C by A with this formula here. And for the CP maps, this just means that phi E, so with this correspondence here, so if you compress phi E in this way, you get phi C. Yeah? So it's a dilation property. Phi E is a kind of power dilation of phi C in this sense. And also, if you look at the other at the other component, you see that phi e is an extension of phi a. Conversion is also true if you start with CP maps having these properties and you represent them in this way as a sum ti dot ti star, then you can prove that the EIs have this form. Yeah? So you can go in both directions. Yeah? So you may also say that phi e is a contractive lifting of phi c by phi I in this sense. Yeah? Okay? So you can try to translate all these things. Well, of course, I should mention as an example, if you take for the lifting the minimal asymmetric dilation, so if E is VC, then phi E is a star homomorphism, and you obtain a discrete version of the dilation theory for CP maps considered by Bhatt, Arveson, and many other people. So that's a special case of a lifting in this, in the sense I use the word in the moment. Well, what about the characteristic function? As we defined it before in the reduced case at least. Now it's well defined for the CP map, fortunately. So there's something to check. So let me show you again. If you represent the CP map in this form, that the TI are not really uniquely determined. So first you should choose a minimal D, and if you do that, then the different representations for the TIs are connected by a unitary D by D matrix. And if you now think again about the characteristic function, it's a kind of intertwiner, where both sides are transformed in the same way. So it turns out it's immediately clear that the characteristic function is well defined for the CP map. So it may be even better to think of these objects as characteristic functions of CP maps, because they are really properties of the CP map and not only of the tuple. And then we have, just as a corollary of the earlier result, we can say that reduced liftings in the form of the previous slide, phi e and phi I and reduced liftings phi e and phi e prime of phi c are conjugate in this sense, with a unitary which is identical on HC, if and only if the characteristic functions are equivalent. So this is just a translation of the earlier results. So I hope this kind of thing will prove useful. We haven't done too much to apply it. What I can show you is just the case where the lifting is sub-isometric and co-isometric at the same time, so kind of intersection between some interesting cases. And let me just show you what sub-isometric lifting means in the CP setting. Look at the following theorem. So what does sub-isometric lifting means? And I also restrict to the co-isometric case. So let us look at the row isometric row contraction E, which is co-isometric and which is a lifting of C by A. Then equivalent lifting is sub-isometric. A is star stable. This is the result we have seen in the beginning of this talk. So in terms of the CP maps, you can say it's equivalent that the powers of phi E applied to the projection to the C space, to the space where C lives, converge to the identity and to infinity. Yes, and this, I would say A to C are convenient means to check whether a lifting is sub-isometric. And an interesting thing is, for sub-isometric liftings, is that we have an order isomorphism between the fixed point sets of CP maps, which are connected by sub-isometric lifting. And the order isomorphism is the compression. Yeah? So and it's really equivalent. So you have this kind of order isomorphisms between fixed point sets if and only if it's sub-isometric. So this is perhaps why it's significant to look at sub-isometric liftings. Eh? So for the proof, we didn't really use the characteristic function here. We used the commutant lifting theorem in the paper Pure States on ON, I think, by Bertelli, Jürgensen, Kishimoto, and Werner. Okay, let me just show you an interesting special case of that, where this may be useful. Look at the following example. So just look at an arbitrary CP map on V of HE, given as a sum EI, X goes to EI, goes to sum EI X EI star, which is unital and which has a normal invariant state psi. So in this case, you can define a subspace HC as the support of this invariant state. And then for HA, you take the orthogonal complement. And then you define CI star as EI star restricted to HZ. And then you can check that we have a lifting. In this, so E is a lifting of C. And now by compression, we get a CP map with a normal invariant state, which is now even a faithful state because we have restricted to the support. Huh? So our classification of sub-isometric liftings applies. We have to check some of these conditions. For example, we may check that the powers of phi e apply to the projection to this subspace converge to 1. And then the whole theory applies. In particular, we have this classification of sub-isometric liftings, which may be useful. And we know fixed point sets are order isomorphic. And I think this may be useful observation. For example, for problems in ergodic theory, which we can, in a way, reduce to the case of a faithful normal invariant state, which may be simpler. So, yes, I think I have time to show you one example on the blackboard. Well, this may be useful to think in this way about it. Yes. So, a case where this process may make a problem simpler is, for example, looking at these fixed-point sets. If we have an invariant state which is faithful, then the fixed-point space is an algebra, is a subalgebra, which is not the case in general. And there's an old example of Arbison for this phenomenon on 3 by 3 matrices, so on, 2 x 3 3, and you map it to x 1 1, x 2 2, 1/2 x 1 1 plus x 2, and here we have arbitrary entries, and here we have zeros. So this is a CP map on the 3x3 matrices. It's unital, but you see that the fixed point space is not an algebra. You see that the fixed points are of the form A, B, 1/2 A plus B. And you see that's not an algebra. So let us look at it in this way. So, for example, you can look at a state, invariant state, given by identity matrix, say lambda 1 minus lambda 0, lambda not equal to 0, something like that. And then we in fact are in this situation. You can check that we have a subisometric lifting here from the first two components to the whole thing. Yeah? So this is a subisometric lifting in my terminology. Starting from the first two components. Yes, you may check it in this way, for example, or it's easy to see. So what do we know, for example, from that? So we know, for example, if we compress the fixed point space to the first two components, this should be an order isomorphism. Now that's quite obvious here. You see, all the information about fixed points is in fact contained in the first two components. And in fact, that's also a proof that the whole thing is subisometric. Yeah? You've seen this is equivalent. So the fact that the restriction to the first two components is an order isomorphism of the fixed points of this fixed point spaces of the whole thing to the compressed thing is a proof that the whole thing is subisometric. Okay, so you see how this old example, how it fits into this kind of analysis, and we haven't done very much, but I hope that a more systematic use of this characteristic function and this analysis of liftings may be helpful in thinking about this kind of problems. Okay, thank you very much.
Looks like all of this probably goes through for semigroups too. One parameter.
Well, yeah, you have to think what. Yes, technically more complicated, but of course you can do the same things. So. Yeah.